There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right. Here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday session getting started in Montgomery this week. Lots coming up. By the way, speaking of which, in hour number two, Senator Chris Elliott will join us to talk about this mud dumping bill. He and Rhett, what are we going to call him? I call him Rhett Marquez because that's how he says it. They're bringing this bill, a state bill, because there's two things going on here, and we'll talk about it with Senator Elliott. There's some part of it we can do with the state, but at the same time, this is Corps of Engineers. This is federal. So this is why I was more interested, you know, in what Senator Britt had been talking about in the past, you know, basically to tell the Corps by taking away the funding for, you know, the open water displacement, right, of the mud. Like, you can't tell them not to do it. I mean, it's like, it's the kind of the Byzantine nature, which is maybe sometimes a good thing, of our government, is to just, you could say, okay, y'all can't do it because I'm not going to give you any money to do it. But now on the state side, there's a different part requiring 80% or 70% to be put into something other than thin layer displacement or whatever we're calling it today. But we'll talk about that. Also, State of the State address coming up tomorrow night. I was going to talk about this later in the show, but maybe I can set it up here. We can talk about it on the text line, which, by the way, if you're new here, welcome. We're glad to have you. The phone number and text line are the same. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106 gets you through on a call or a text. In addition, you can use the app to leave us a talkback message if you're on the FM Talk 106.5 app, which is pretty dandy. Right there on the front page, you'll see the microphone icon. If you press that, lets you record a message, sends it to the show, and we can play it there on the air. So, but probably more on the text line if you want to do this for tomorrow. We'll probably remind you about this tomorrow, but let's play. We do this sometimes, different state of whatever events. Play a little bingo here. So, State of the State bingo tomorrow night. Last State of the State for Governor Ivey. So, terms you would put in the governor's bingo. A hardworking Alabamian is always a favorite. Little school children. Give me some other things. The platitudes. Jobs added. So you can hit me up on the text line, and we'll put these all into the calculator and make our bingo card for tomorrow night. I think 5:30 or so, State of the State address from Governor Ivey. You just, what do you think, what kind of platitudes will she throw out? What terms will she throw out? You can put these on the text line, and we'll get them lined up here, and I'll be ready to go tomorrow night. All right. Actually, let me bring on our guest here, and you check him out. He's the hardest working man in Alabama media. You can see him on Capital Journal. We'll talk about that. Also read over at Alabama Daily News. And the man ends up getting forced onto radio shows all over the state. The crowd goes wild for Todd Stacey. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sean. How's it going? Sorry. We got a full slate of radio shows, but you're always my favorite.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm working on something very serious here, and you know how I am, a very serious guy. For tomorrow night's State of the State address, I play a bingo game on these. I do it also on federal level, but I'm looking for terms that Governor Ivey will say, or, you know, phrases or whatever tomorrow night. I mean, hardworking Alabamians is always on the list. School children on the list. I would say jobs added. Anything else you want to put on for a square on our bingo card?
I would put either the words y'all or folks.
Okay. Y'all, oh, let me write these down. Y'all or folks.
Yeah. And if you just, and she's not the only one, but the governor will, you know, for kind of dramatic effect, be like, now y'all, you
yes,
know?
Yes.
Or she'll say, folks. And now that's, look, I do it too. I use those words, but when it's written into a speech, it can be kind of funny.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to, so, and y'all on the text line could decide, I do the same thing, if y'all and folks are different squares or they're the same square. I got to figure that one out. That's the tough thing. I'll let the audience figure that one out for us, Tom.
Yeah, right. I guess it depends how many squares you have.
Yeah, we'll see how many turns
we get.
Well,
while we're talking about that, just a reminder, you can watch State of the State on public television. I don't know what, every cable outlet's a different channel, but whether it's YouTube TV or anything else, APT will be broadcasting State of the State. Our coverage starts at 5:30 tomorrow night. We'll have some pregame commentary. The speech goes live at 6 there from the Old House Chamber. Usually it lasts about 30 minutes, 45 minutes, depending on applause and things like that. And then we'll have some post-game commentary, including the official Democratic response, which this year is coming from Sam Jones right there in Mobile. So, and we'll be on the air till 7:30 with some post-game commentary and things like that. So, yeah, great way to tune in. It's also live on our YouTube channel on aptv.org. So lots of ways to watch State of the State live on Alabama Public Television.
Okay, well, here's my segue, because your YouTube channel is where I watch Capital Journal, so we can watch that tomorrow. Y'all just go to YouTube and look for it, and you'll find Capital Journal.
It'll be live.
And so we'll be live feeding there, where I normally go watch in retrospect what you do on Friday nights, and like this weekend, watching what you did with this candidate for governor of the state of Alabama, one-time Senator Doug Jones.
Yeah.
What was your takeaway on that?
Well, I appreciated him coming in. We try to interview all statewide candidates, and sometimes congressional candidates. We could probably get to that since y'all got a big race down there. We would try to interview all candidates, and so this was Doug Jones' turn. Well, obviously, when Tuberville announced, I guess that was what, back in September, October?
Yeah, I think so.
We had him on. Of course, he's been on a lot, but so I wanted to have Doug Jones on. He came on to really explain why is he running, what issues he wanted to focus on, you know, things like that. It was a good interview. I encourage everybody to watch it. What's interesting to me is that Doug Jones acknowledges that it's an uphill battle, right? He's not an idiot. He understands that this is a very Republican state.
Right.
It's only gotten more Republican since his kind of unique victory back in 2017. And so, you know, I asked him directly about that. Like, how do you recreate that coalition, you know, understanding that you can't recreate Roy Moore, right? You can't put Roy Moore back on the ballot.
Yeah,
if only he could, he would probably.
Yeah, he's not running against Roy Moore this time. He's running against Coach Tuberville.
Exactly. And so I appreciated him acknowledging that and not being just kind of pretending to be naive about it. But yeah, so I mean, I think he's going to challenge Tuberville on some things. He seems to be pretty heavy on the gambling part, and you've seen that way before this interview. He's been out there talking about lottery, sports betting, things like that. So I expect the gambling issue to be a part of this debate. But overall, a quality interview and a glimpse into the kind of campaign that you're going to see. And what's interesting to me, Sean, is at least that it's going to be a race this time. I fully expect, if all things being equal, I mean, Tuberville should run away with it, but you know, Doug Jones on the ballot is different than, was it Flowers last time?
Mm-hmm.
That just was, you know, barely nobody even remembered. I can't even remember her first name. So, like, at least there's a quality candidate for the Democrats, you know, and there'll be something of a general election. I like contests.
Me too. You would agree that, I mean, Doug Jones is probably the biggest brand name for Democrats in Alabama.
Oh, sure. There's no question about that. I mean, you know, the best they had was until now was Walt Maddox, because, yes, he's a Democrat, but he's a pretty conservative Democrat. I mean, the biggest thing he was running on was Medicaid expansion. But he was a really good candidate, about the best the Democrats were going to find. And even he lost by 10 points to Kay Abbey. So, like, yeah. But Doug Jones, even better than of that because he's got very strong name ID and everything. But it would take a really unique situation for it really to even be a contest.
As we look at some of the what's happening this week, State of the State obviously happens to kick off session in Montgomery. Y'all have a write-up over at Alabama Daily News about a little what to expect here. Can you kind of talk about I highlighted some stuff, but I want to hear what you think is the biggest thing. I mean, session got to get done so everybody can go campaign. What are they going to come in with?
Yeah, well, it's always the budgets. That's the one thing they have to do is pass the Education Trust Fund and the General Fund. And that always sounds like it's just kind of one easy thing to do. The budgets encapsulate a lot of different things, a lot of different line items and honestly, policy. Because you can pass a law all you want for like an education program, but until you fund it, it doesn't matter and things like that. So a lot of policy does get made in that budget writing process. So those are big, huge lifts that take weeks to go to develop. So there's that. I do think you're going to see more public safety legislation. You're going to see, you know, they did a lot of that last year, but some things didn't get across the finish line. You may see more money and support for inner city crime, you know, trying to get these police departments and inner city, to, you know, kind of bolster them up like has happened in Montgomery. I think you might see that. You'll see this push for the death penalty. Representative Simpson down there in Baldwin mm-hmm. County, or in Mobile County, has a big push to, you know, allow the death penalties for child rape, essentially. And that's actually a novel question legally nationally, which is so it's not just in Alabama. It's not a messaging bill. It's actually a real thing. So, yeah, you'll see that. Also, you're going to see a push for career and technical education. I don't know if you saw it, but Trish Crane did a really great story over the weekend about Baldwin Prep and everything they're doing with that massive complex over there on the parkway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that a lot of lawmakers are taking notice of. They want to replicate that throughout the state because, you know, so much has been done on the literacy side, on the numeracy side, trying to get our public schools just in general. Are there scores to improve? And it's worked. You've seen some real positive movement, especially in the lower grades, on reading and math. But there's going to be a big push this year on career and technical education to say, okay, for those middle grades, we need to get started earlier in the middle grades for students to get a head start if they want to go into some of these fields that are, man, I mean, you just look at the numbers. You can end up getting paid a lot more for some of these technical careers than you will for a, you know, English literature degree. So I do expect to see a push there this session.
Yeah, and I've talked about it at a local level here with folks on job development. I said, I don't know exactly what the speeches sound like when they go into school because you got all these opportunities here and there's jobs going unfilled. I've said to like the CEO of the Mobile Chamber, former Congressman Bradley Byrne, I'm like, just go into the school and say, hey, who wants to make $125,000, you know, by the time they're in their mid-20s? I mean, instead of just saying, here's how you'll soar to new careers and yada, yada, just talk money with them. Because if I was I'm a 17, 18-year-old kid and you start talking about that money, now you got my attention.
Right. And that's what I loved about Trish's story is it had a lot of pictures and you could see the kids. One of them, they were working on a motor, like a big automotive motor. And, man, you could just see the kids dialed in. You know, for students, you know, for some kids growing up, man, to work on cars and stuff, that's like kind of in your blood as a boy, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, you can almost say, like, you're saying that this is like a hobby of mine. I can make money for this? And so I agree. And it's something that we can't talk enough about because as much as for decades, it was just, you know, got to go to college. Otherwise, you know, you failed. It's such a ridiculous concept. And so I do think, but it's not just saying it. You've got to put your money where your mouth is, fund programs. It's not just, you know, throwing money at the two-year system or throwing money here or there. You got to, just like we've done in math and reading, you got to be programmatic about it and really have a big focus on it and measure outcomes. Is what we're funding working? You know, that's a big thing you'll see in this legislature. They want to measure. They want to, Yeah, they may. They're going to fund you, but they're going to ask at the back end, is what we're funding working? And I think that's hugely important.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you talk about education too. That's kind of the two budgets, tale of two budgets here. You write about, first of all, general fund is looking like it's growing here, although there's some worries about this going forward. But then the ETF decline here, does this mean no more movement on the state's portion of the grocery tax?
Well, I don't know about grocery tax. They've obviously cut it in half. But, you know, if you look at some of that polling that came out, I guess it was last week, grocery prices and just economic things in general are at the top of the list in terms of what voters are paying attention to, or that what voters want action on. Affordability is kind of the watchword, you know. So I have no doubt that this campaign season you're going to see lawmakers touting the fact that they cut the grocery tax in half. But they're not done yet. There's a lot of lawmakers that want to end it completely. And that makes a lot of sense. But every time you do that, you know, you take money away from the education trust fund. So you got to do it. That's why they've been kind of methodical about it and deliberate. So I don't know. I think you'll certainly see a bill to do it. Whether or not it gains traction, I don't know. Because again, the budgets are healthy. They're fine. But they're not just running over with extra, you know, supplemental money. I mean, we've had, I think, seven or eight years of record budgets, both in the education trust fund and the general fund. That's, you know, that's a long stretch. And so things tend to correct. Now, the good thing is there's plenty of money in reserves. This is a conservative legislature. They have budgeted conservatively. So, God forbid we do hit a recession, there's money in the bank to make up for some of that. But that does cut down on extra projects and extra tax cuts and things like that. And so I would be doubtful that another penny comes on the grocery tax this year. But you never know. File a bill and see how it goes.
Watch it. People want to, of course, check out the website and that email I get 6 days a week. How do they do it?
It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. And right now is the perfect time to do it, because if you just want to keep up with what's going on during the legislative session, get the email in the morning, and in the evening, after the local news, tune in to Capital Journal, where we broadcast nightly during the session, 10:30 after your local news on Alabama Public Television.
And speaking of that channel, so tomorrow pregame at 5:30, and yep. then State of the State address, and then the postgame on there as well.
Right, featuring Sam Jones, the official Democratic response. Yeah, tune in.
Okay, and your square's going to be y'all and folks.
I need to your bingo card.
Okay, I'll send you it when we get it filled out. There he goes. It's Todd Stacey, our guest, and we'll be right back. More of Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right to 1227 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Let's get some update here traffic-wise here. Thank you. Michael says Dawes Road at Grand Bay Wilmer Road is completely shut down at the intersection, which from what appears to be a deadly wreck with an 18-wheeler. Wow, so Dawes at Grand Bay Wilmer. I wonder what happened at that. So sheriffs and troopers have it completely closed from all directions. Fox 10 News is on the scene. I'm sure Leanna will get us an update on that. People chiming in here on our bingo card for tomorrow night's State of the State address from Governor Ivey. And you heard Todd Stacey had added in folks and y'all. My hardworking Alabamians is a perennial. You know, how many times will she use that? Even though, like all politicians, it's always hardworking Alabamians. I'm like, I can point out some that aren't, but school children, jobs touting, you know, what else will be on the list? Southern Jedi says I-10 Mobile River Bridge. Okay, you think she'll? I wonder what her legacy is here. Jason says, Sean, I'll take safe communities for Alabamians for 500. Yes. Is she going to say it just that way, or she? But that, yeah, Jason, I think you're right. I think that'll be in there. This from IT Jesus said no tolls on the new Mobile Bay Bridge, and that he said he sent the one finger salute. He said that to Governor Bemaw. I have to look. So I've never would think that I would have used that with my idiot buddies, but I didn't realize there was a one finger salute emoji out there. I have to go scroll further down in my emoji choices. This is interesting. B-Dark says, Sean, don't you know the listeners are way more interested in a blow-up penis than mud in the bay? I don't know. We'll see. We'll compare and contrast when we talk to Senator Elliott at the 1 o'clock hour. All right, coming right back after the news. Stand by.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Great time to check in with the professor. My buddy Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Ron, here we go. Another week. Precious metals, what are they doing?
Precious metals, unbelievably, are up again, Sean. I mean, silver's over $85 an ounce, and gold's trading right at $4,600 even. And it's a brisk market. I mean, it's not just, obviously, Mobile. All around the country, different dealers that I've been speaking with over the last few weeks, you know, same as us, just haven't had time to do anything, which is a good problem to have. I mean, I'm not complaining, even though I do sound like I'm whining, but it is definitely a brisk market, and lots of things are affecting it, Sean. Whether or not the Venezuela thing is affecting it or not, I couldn't tell you. I haven't had any time since we opened this morning. It's been nonstop, which is a good thing, but it's still a good mix, about 50-50, buying and selling. You know, we got people profit-taking, and we got people jumping in with both feet, so people are doing it both ways, Sean.
Yeah, and people could think about, you know, you and I have talked about this, Anna and I have talked about this, not just on the selling side, people coming in, not just coming in to sell rounds or bars. People have silver and gold and broken jewelry and flatware and all kind of stuff laying around.
Yeah, and the flatware stuff adds up fast, especially with silver at $86 an ounce. We bought a flatware set on Friday, and it was like almost $6,000. The same flatware set just about a year and a half ago would have been about $2,500. So, I mean, if you're not using your flatware or tea sets, as long as they're sterling, now is a really good time to have that stuff moved out, melted, whichever way you want to look at it, and profit take on it.
So, I mean, they just come in and say, hey, here's what I got, and y'all are going to look at it. I mean, you're going to do this at the store.
Yeah, we'll weigh it right in front of them and you know, make an offer. If they want it, we'll pay them cash, check, however they want us to do it. We can do an ACH right to their account, and then we'll take their items and either resell them or melt them.
I love it, man. All right, tell folks how to come see you.
We're located at 2204 Gumbert Street in Midtown Mobile. They can find us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com or give us a call at 251-725-1590.
Hey, thank you, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean. Thank you.
All right. There goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Speaking of that Venezuela effect, and I think I just heard about it today, so I'm not coming in at any kind of expert level from this, and maybe some of y'all have been focused on the story. One of them, there's several parts of it. One is that there's gold and silver that Venezuela has that is held in it's in the billions, I think, in a bank in England. Morgan Stanley, so the investing, their website saying this, investors are closely monitoring the aftermath of the U.S. military operation in Venezuela, which led to the removal of Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores, both now, okay, we know that part. So following the operation, Venezuela's Vice President, Delcy Rodriguez, demanded the immediate release of the president and the first lady. Okay, we know that part. Let's talk about the money part here. Okay, here we go. Energy. Oil prices gained on the first trading day after the U.S. intervention as markets weighed the near-term risk of production disruptions in Venezuela as a prospect of higher output over the medium term, which, by the way, you want any like real insight into that, go back to a week ago, the podcast for this show a week ago, and my conversation with Jay Young from King Operating. He's a deep well of information about the oil business, and we talked about that. It says... So there's, and then it says fixed in, so there's the oil part that's been talked about. Morgan Stanley also talking about fixed income. Venezuelan bond rally could extend. So the debt market is likely to see more immediate effects from recent events, with bonds of the government of Venezuela and the state-controlled oil producer PDVSA continuing their rally after strong gains in late 2025. Markets had priced a high probability of escalation. And so there's, you can trade in this Venezuelan bond rally. Also, on the gold side, here we go. Gold prices showed gains after the escalation between the U.S. and Venezuela, as demand for the precious metals usually increases in times of geopolitical tension. The uncertainty about what's next in the U.S.-Venezuela relationship keeps the attractiveness of gold as a safe haven. Additionally, any weakness in the U.S. dollar could give another boost to gold. So another thing pulling gold up, right? You have the worry about the inflation in this country, and maybe we have time here. We can get into what's being done, and now not only the removal of Jay Powell, Jerome Powell, Treasury Secretary, at the Fed there, not just that issue, but he's now going to be replaced. I think he has 4 months left in term. Now there's a lawsuit. I saw a story on New York Times that I think was saying that there's a lawsuit now. Federal investigation. Federal prosecutors opening an investigation into Fed Chair Powell. So, but we'll probably get to that later. But more, yeah, so this is Morgan Stanley talking about potential gains for defense stocks as well. So this is like Morgan Stanley and like many other companies are putting out why they think, you know, where the hot sectors are going to be. But the gold thing, and then therefore, ergo, silver, that's one of the drives there. And they also, they point out that political uncertainty, people go to precious metals. But in addition, there's a side story to this. I'm going to find it. We'll talk about it. That there's a big bunch of actual gold and silver belonging to Venezuela that's in a bank in Britain, in England. And that's like maybe taken out of the, you know, that now that's taken out of play. Therefore, there's an immediate move of scarcity. I don't know. It also said potential gains for defense stocks. No, duh. Really? U.S. defense industry doing good? No. Says before the January 3rd intervention, U.S. defense stocks showed no reaction to reports of boat strikes in the Caribbean. But the latest events signal a potentially more serious situation with President Trump not ruling out the possibility of troops on the ground. It's resulting in a gains for defense stocks out there. So the senior aerospace and defense equity analyst for Morgan Stanley, Kristen Lawag, says significant escalation from here in Venezuela and or in neighboring areas is not already priced into U.S. defense stocks today. So there you go. That's what they're saying about what to buy out there. All right. Back to the text line. Let me get a few of these. These are more for our bingo card for tomorrow night. So 6 o'clock, State of the State address from Governor Ivey. You know, you were putting the terms in on the bingo card that she's going to use. King of all unnamed texters said, no step too high. I make it. CB Carl said, rebuilding Alabama. Yeah, that's a solid one. That's a solid one. What else? Let's see. Scrollverine said, mature adults don't use emojis. And then IT Jesus came back and said, just said, I only know about the one finger salute emoji because I've accidentally said it to my now ex-wife. Now, understood. Because I didn't have my glasses on and thought I was sending her a thumbs up. How'd that go over? We'll have to talk privately. Also, Scrollverine said, let's talk about the stupid shooting at Murphy. We can. Probably do that in the second half of next hour. Saw that news. And here, you know, basically, here we go again. With all that, here we go again. And then while we're talking about money out there, Dalton brought this up this morning. And this is one of these places. This is the divide between conservatism and conservative populism. And this leads me sometimes to be criticizing the president. And a lot of y'all get upset. Some of y'all agree. That's the purpose of this show. I don't like paying credit card interest. If y'all hadn't figured out that kind of with over the years listening to me, debt and financing debt is something I don't like, right? That's a personal thing because it's just, I guess I'm too much like my grandfather, right? Who, which, and business wise, I know that people would critique my grandfather's businesses and say, well, you know, you should do this on finance and depreciate and amortize. And he's just a smart farmer that said, well, but when I pay for something, it's paid for and there's no debt service and I have capital to use on something else, which I stuck with. So the idea of credit card companies charging people exorbitant rates on their debt as a populist side of it is bad, right? But for business, and I don't like it, but do we need the government? Even these days, our government has moved into ownership or partial stakes in businesses out there. And are we going to then say, also, they can chime in on, this is what the left does, right? It's telling businesses what they can and can't do. Story from The Guardian says, President Trump announced a one-year cap that would limit credit card interest rates to 10% this week, in a move that prompted mixed reaction from lawmakers and beyond. It's almost like when I have to agree with Lindsey Graham and it makes me ill, that I have to agree with the people that are deriding Trump on this, because I don't think this is what our country's about. I don't think it's a great thing that the credit card companies are doing this, right? And it says here, fifth anniversary of the current term. Trump framed it in a way to stop what he called ripoffs by credit card companies charging high interest, often 20 to 30% or more. I agree. It's a ripoff. It's bad ideas. Do not do it. Does this mean that this needs to be done? Now, it's a proposal from Trump. It's not a law. It would have to go through Congress, and Congress is so bought off by the credit card companies, I can't imagine they would go with it. But if it would be enacted, what the president has proposed here, it'd be lower interest costs for consumers with revolving balances. Credit cards currently average 20% APR or higher in the United States. So a 10% ceiling would cut interest rate costs, obviously, by 50%, right, for people who carry debt. Now, they said the potential savings, some researchers estimate households could save tens of billions, with a B, of dollars in interest payments under such a cap. That's a great thing. All that is great. But is it the job of our federal government to tell that business what they can do there? This sounds like such a Democrat thing. But it's populism. This is the problem with conservative populism versus just good old stick-in-the-mud conservatism. Reaction out there. Financial markets reacted to this. Bank and credit card stocks have slid on the news of the proposal. That's ridiculous. The people that panicked from that, wouldn't you wait until like Congress is going to take it up before you would start selling your credit card companies in your portfolio? Banks and industry groups are criticizing the idea. Of course they are. Duh. It's, their ox getting gored. It said it would reduce access to credit for many consumers. Well, it says especially those with poor credit scores. Well, maybe that's okay. Then reduce it. Prompt banks to cut credit limits, cancel cards, or shift revenue into fees instead of interest, and push borrowers towards higher cost, less regulated options like payday loans or buy now, pay later products. But let's get to this is talking around the edges of it. The core of this is, should the government be telling these companies, even if it's 20 to 30%, and it's a horrible thing, it's bad, but is it the job of government to tell the business they can't do this? I mean, does this not sound like something that would come from the left to y'all? I mean, Bernie Sanders had a bill last year. Bernie Sanders had a bill that would cap credit card rates at 10%. Now, maybe this is part of the design of helping, to help the Republicans in the midterms, as President Trump's kind of out on the campaign trail. Obviously, I don't know if he's not running again. I'd like him to stick with the plan we have and two terms and out, but does he believe this is going to help Republicans win in places where they wouldn't before? I'd like to get your take on that as well. 343-0106, 251-343-0106. That's the text line and the phone line. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on a Monday. Text line and phone line, both same digits, 251-343-0106. Also, a reminder, a shopkeeping thing here. We are just, let's see, how many days? 3-4 days away? Yeah, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so 3 days, whatever it is. Friday, coming up on Friday, we launch Moon Pie Minutes for 2026. I've been working on those along with the voice of the Moon Pie Minutes, Stephen McNair, and they will get started on Friday and go the whole way through Ash Wednesday. Yeah, carnival time is here, even though it seems like it was just Christmas because it just was. It's early, but next year is even earlier. We have even earlier Mardi Gras next year. So I need these to... It's just self-serving, but the deer hunters in the audience here, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, can I have Mardi Gras just later? Can we get through season and then do Mardi Gras? All right, couple questions here. Texter says, black smoke and fire by the Cochrane Bridge. U-Haul man, any info on the fire that's been burning by the Africatown Bridge? Been burning for a few hours now. Yeah, so that was first reported this morning here at FM Talk 106.5. A barge... It was interesting. A barge was carrying scrap metal. And this is from MyNBC 15. Said a barge carrying scrap metal. I think that wouldn't be particularly flammable. But barge carrying scrap metal caught fire this morning on the Mobile River, according to Alabama State Docks officials. The barge is in what was called a fleeting area, I guess where you fleet, where barges remain moored and stationary when the fire began around 7 o'clock this morning. According to state docs, the barge is in a safe area and not impacting port operations or river traffic. So I guess I don't know if the fire boats are out there working on it or they're just letting the thing burn. But yeah, it's also some video of it. It's scrap metal. It must just be. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do see fire boats are working on it in the river. So I don't know what caught in that barge of scrap metal, but it's burning and y'all are still seeing it out there. But yeah, I guess the good thing about having something burning out in the river, you pull it out in the river, and then can't catch anything else on fire, right? So that's what's going on. BDARC said, looks like troops on the ground in Venezuela makes money. Troops in Iran, we lose money and life. Let's stay focused on our backyard. Rock and Roll Doctor sends me a link here. I don't have any time to read it. It said, Venezuela's hard assets moved out of country prior to Maduro's extraction. Okay. Maybe that's part of that story. I've got to dig into this. They said the Venezuela effect on precious metals prices. Like they had Venezuela had some, I think in like, not ETF, I mean like physical gold and silver. And I think I heard billions in this. Joe T said, here for the children of Alabama. Put that on the bingo card. Okay. Yeah. Because she always, the little children, that's on the bingo card. It goes on to say people need to learn to live within their means. By the way, that sounds like good advice for our government. And the credit card thing, like once again, the story, I mean, Trump talking about the 10% cap, a one-year term of a 10% cap on credit card interest rates in a populist way, like that's great. It'd save everybody money. Sure. Is that the beachhead we want to establish for things government can do? To me, it just sounds like, and listen, they said it would save billions for American consumers. I get all that. I'd like us all to save billions of dollars. But is that, and this is coming from a Republican president. It sounds like something the Democrats would do. Something can be good, like personally, but maybe not the thing we should be doing with our government, involving it in that. Maybe if they want to put a PSA campaign out that says, hey, people, don't run up money on your credit cards. That'd be good. PSA, more you know, with the little star thing. Yeah. Hey, Johnny, don't hold balances on that credit card because it's money you could have yourself. You're giving for the right to have money. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Sean. The more you know. But that the government needs to tell the private business or the public business what they can do, I don't know. Craig says here, West Alabama corridor is bingo material. Craig, I don't know if I agree. I think with the controversy around it, she might stay away from it. But then again, she might just be so in her own world that she thinks that's the thing everybody's going to be excited about. I don't know. Let's see. Michael, Trump's interest restrictions are completely in line with the founding fathers of America. I don't necessarily like Trump's interest thing, but for nearly 2,000 years, usury was illegal in nearly every country, including America. It was only in the late 1900s that its regulation eased when the central banks reformed and fiat currency became a thing in the U.S. It exploded post-World War II with the influx of European Jews like the Anasazi. The usury fee, so are you going to decide, what that level is? What's that number? If 10% is okay, because you could, I mean, I could play this game. I could just throw red meat out there and go, well, 10% is right because that's the tithe to the church and that's what. But who do you decide what that level is? And what is it? Now we're telling businesses what they can do? Like I said, I don't think the interest thing is good, but just, does it need to be the province of government here? C.B. Carl said, rebuilding Alabama should be on the bingo card. All right. And goes on to say, every time you let the government bail you out, you give the government more power. Oh, you establish beachheads of the things that are okay for government to be in. This is that creep that happens. Usually happens more when Democrats are in the White House, but and of course, this is just a proposal. I mean, Congress would have to vote it through, and they're so beholden to the credit card companies, it would never happen, but there's that. All right, coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile, just minutes away.